Hello and welcome to episode 721 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm one of the co-founders here at ETR, as always joined by fellow co-founder Evan Silva. And it is time. It is time to start looking at the awards markets. And no one better to do that than our old friend, Mr. Ryan Reynolds, who covers the awards betting for us. Ryan, how's it going today?
Doing wonderful, gentlemen. Looking forward to this as always.
Evan, how you doing today?
Great. For my money, there is no better analyst of the awards market every year consistently. I mean, how long have you been doing this on a bigger stage, Ryan? Like 4 or 5 years at this point?
Yeah, this will be year five here at ETR.
Year five. Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, and this is a great time to bet long shots. And I know that Ryan's going to give us some long shot ideas. And he also is really good at breaking down. And this is really what's most important because people can make their own decisions at the end of the day. He's really good at pinpointing the criteria that we want to look for when we are targeting, when we are placing bets on, you know, on the awards market in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, I used to think that player props were the softest NFL market. I now actually kind of think awards might be the softest. I mean, everything's obviously getting tougher, but season-long props, regular season props, awards, in terms of NFL betting, I think that those are the softest ones. On today's show, we're going to talk about each of the seven main awards: Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year. I think it's interesting to talk about these from a betting perspective, but also because it gives me some ideas for fantasy drafts. And obviously, like, I want to be starting my awards betting portfolio now, because as Evan said, long shot time is now. When you start building a portfolio, you can build some really good stuff if you have long shots that become favorites in there. Before we get into it today, important note, we have found some outrageous price discrepancies across different books in these markets, which we'll note when we get into it. But I mean, they're everywhere. Something might not be a bet for me at 40 to 1, but at 70 to 1, it might be a smash. If you're going to bet on any sports, I can't stress enough how important it is to get the best price every single time. So head to ETR, go to the props tab. Under there, you'll see a link to an article called ETR Sportsbook Bonus Offers. Find your state, get your bonus, and also be sure you're getting the best price by having money on multiple books. Good luck out there. All right, let's get started here with Offensive Rookie of the Year. Want to note for our friends watching on YouTube, which I think is a much better experience if anybody is watching on YouTube. We have our screen shared here, which is on DraftKings Awards. I want to note again, this may not be the best price. We'll try to note, but please, before you bet anything, shop around, find the best price. We do have DraftKings up here for this. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Ryan, is not really a quarterback award, right? I mean, CJ Stroud won it last year, but Garrett Wilson won it. Ja'Marr Chase won it. Saquon, Kamara, Gurley, Odell. I would not consider Offensive Rookie of the Year a quarterback award whatsoever. This year, the overwhelming favorite, though, is Caleb Williams, who's around 2 to 1 pretty much across all books. Ryan, what are your general thoughts here on Offensive Rookie of the Year and how it's shaping up early on?
Yeah, definitely agree. I would say Ty maybe goes to the quarterback in this race. If it's close, I think it was Dak Prescott edged out Ezekiel Elliott a few years ago. There's been a few instances in that, but yeah, anyone can win this for the most part. You know, the Bears are, they look like they could be a playoff team. So Caleb Williams, top overall pick, going to a rare situation like that, should be the favorite. Marvin Harrison reminds me a bit of this year's Bijan Robinson in terms of Offensive Rookie of the Year. Most likely to be the most productive in a good situation where he could be the top option in that passing offense with a high caliber quarterback in Kyler Murray. Jaden Daniels, we got him at a value a couple weeks ago at 1,400 or plus 1,400. He's correct now at around plus 600. You can still get J.J. McCarthy at a pretty good value on FanDuel. You know, the question is how early in the season does he play? And Malik Nabers, you know, if Daniel Jones does one thing, he throws good slants and good crossers, and Nabers is a separator. So I think he's a sneaky, interesting option too.
I want to throw it to Evan in a second here, but if you read Ryan's article, that 14 to 1 on Jaden Daniels that was on FanDuel right after the draft that Ryan wrote about, I thought was awesome, because you want kind of long shot stuff on Jaden Daniels, because I kind of consider him like really wide range of outcomes. If he hits, if Jaden Daniels hits, he's going to hit in a massive way where he like does Lamar things with his legs and also throws. So I'm not that opposed to Jaden Daniels, even at like 650 or 7-1. But gosh, that 14-1 was so good. But Evan, go ahead. Any thoughts on the offensive rookie of the year market here?
I think among the top five that Ryan just rattled off, Malik Nabor stands out to me the most at 12-1, because I think he's a clear alpha, number six overall pick in the draft. As Ryan said, he runs, you know, he's going to shine at the routes at which Daniel Jones is best at throwing the football. And I mean, I think he could have a massive target share for the Giants this year. Brian Daboll obviously has shown in the past that he's willing to throw the ball with a high volume. If you look further down the board, the one long shot that stuck out to me was Jonathan Brooks at 50-1. Mm-hmm. Obviously he's coming off the torn ACL, but it has been reported, I think in multiple places, certainly by Rap Sheet of NFL Network, that they expect him to be ready for training camp. He was the first running back drafted by a fairly significant margin. He's awesome. And Dan Morgan, the Panthers GM, and Dave Canales have talked about how they kind of want to be more run first this season. 50-1 for the first running back drafted any year, that stands out to me. And his competition is thin. I know, Adam, you've been talking about how they might want to trade Miles Sanders. Chuba Hubbard shouldn't scare anybody. They did just sign Rashad Penny, but he doesn't. I mean, he couldn't even get on the field at all in a three-man rotation in Philadelphia last year. So the path to me for Jonathan Brooks to do this, I think, is fairly clear. At 50-1, I think it's almost like a must bet.
Yeah, Jonathan Brooks was indeed on my list. The reason that he's 50-1, I think, is twofold. First, he's coming off the ACL tear, obviously. Second, Carolina is projected to be one of the worst teams in the entire league. I don't know, Ryan, how much do you think team success matters to this award? And I do have some other long shots that were at least on my mind, but yeah, the Brooks 50-1 and the best price I saw was indeed on DraftKings at 50-1.
I would say it depends. It can be a factor. It can definitely help you. For instance, if Caleb Williams lights it up and the Bears are a playoff team, the nod's probably going to go to him, even if someone else is super productive, but it's not a requirement in this race. Like it isn't just about every other one.
Okay. Other long shots I wanted to mention. Ladd McConkey is 40-1 on DraftKings. I'll look at the prices elsewhere. He is coming into a situation where if he's good, and you know, I think he's good. I don't know for sure. If he's good, he could immediately earn 27% of the targets from Justin Herbert. Now, everybody assumes that the Chargers are going to have one of the lowest throw rates in the league. And I kind of agree with that, but people are way overconfident in that take perhaps. And we're talking about 40-1 on Ladd McConkey as the number one receiver for Justin Herbert. So any thoughts on that one, Ryan, and any other guys you wanted to mention?
Yeah, that's my favorite long shot in this race too. I think Brooks makes sense too. He's the only running back I'd consider at this point, but you know, like you said, McConkey, like how often do you get a guy who could be the top option for a guy like Justin Herbert? And I'm with you too. I think you know, they're probably going to be more run heavy than we'd like maybe, but I think people are blowing that out of proportion too, where, you know, if he had, you know, like you said, a 25% target share, that wouldn't really surprise me at all.
Yeah. McConkey best price is indeed DraftKings 40-1. This is like 30-1, 25, 20-1 elsewhere. So anytime you get something that far off market, last one on my list here, I wanted to bring up to you guys is Rome Odunze 25-1 on FanDuel, 22-1 here on DraftKings. Obviously, I don't think he can get there unless there's an injury in front or he just alphas it. But I just keep coming back to, if this was a different wide receiver class, Rome Odunze would have been the first wide receiver off the board. And if you're the first wide receiver off the board, you're in this race for sure. And also Keenan Allen is 32. He's missed a ton of time the last two seasons. So maybe it's a little thin. I'd like to have a longer price, but if something happened to Keenan or if Rome just turns out to be an absolute baller, I don't think it's crazy to see him having a huge rookie year here. Obviously, DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet is a lot to contend with, but that was one that caught my eye. Also, any others you guys wanted to mention? I will note that Ricky Pearsall is 60-1 on FanDuel. If Ayuk or Debo were to be traded, I would immediately try to bet that. And Trey Benson is 61 on FanDuel also, if you think he can beat out James Conner. I don't think that's likely, but 60-1 on FanDuel is okay. Anybody else in this market you guys wanted to mention?
I think Brian Thomas is worth a look at least at 25-1, just on the off chance that he quickly emerges as Trevor Lawrence's number one receiver, which, I mean, I think that is within his range of potential outcomes, at least from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, there's a 30-1 out there on Brian Thomas as well right now. All right. Defensive rookie of the year. So last year, I think this was one of the best spots because Jalen Carter was so overvalued for so long. I mean, the guy was like benched and rotation player for one of the worst defenses in the league, and he was still the favorite. That's like never happens in any other NFL market where things are so soft that you have a guy that we know is not the right side, and he's still the favorite. So Ryan, what do you think about this year? And obviously Will Anderson ended up winning. You know, I think hopefully some people got him at 40-1. I know we talked about that on a show last year, but yeah, Ryan, what are your thoughts on defensive rookie of the year?
This is a super abnormal race because usually it's won by a top of the draft class pass rusher. There wasn't one this year. The first defensive player taken was the 15th pick, Colts edge Latuo Lado. That's going to be something I struggle with for the foreseeable future. You know, Dallas Turner went to the Vikings. Those are, depending on what book you go to, those are the two favorites. You know, they flip-flop them at different spots. None of them strikes me as a great value, but Jared Verse is another top of the draft. And in this case, a top of the draft edge rusher. If Aaron Donald was still a Ram, I'd like him more, but you know, he's someone worth monitoring at least. And you know, the two corners that kind of slid, Kenyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, you know, they went to contenders with the Eagles and Lions. I think both of those two guys are at least worth monitoring. I'm not sure I'd bet on them now, but they're worth monitoring.
So my only concern is that historically, this has been a lot of pass rushers, right? The last 5 years, it's been Will Anderson, Micah Parsons, Chase Young, Nick Bosa. Now, Sauce Gardner had an unreal year and did get in there and win it, but it's just so much more likely to be a pass rusher. I think I do have one long shot that I wanted to get your guys take on as a pass rusher. But yeah, Evan, any initial thoughts on defensive rookie of the year here?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep in mind that this was like a really, really weak defensive draft. And as you mentioned, the first defensive player didn't even come off to the board until 15 overall. The one that stuck out to me from a long shot standpoint, and I didn't like this pick in real life, and I gave the Titans a really bad draft grade in large part because of it, is Tavondre Sweat, who was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He got a DUI. He ballooned like north of 400 pounds at times in college. He got a DUI 3 weeks before the draft. I was shocked that he went as early as he did, but it's not like he's in danger of missing time. And he's going to go right in there playing next to Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry. And I mean, I think he's going to be a full-time player. He's 366 pounds. He just won a really big award this past year. He's the 38th overall pick in the draft. You can get him at 80-1 to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. He was not a big sack guy in college, so that's a big thing. But if he can pile up 6 sacks and, you know, I mean, Jalen Carter, sort of a similar kind of prospect, was the favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year last year. I don't know. Why can't Tavondre Sweat be this year?
80-1 is certainly quite long. The guy that I wanted to get your guys' take on is Chop Robinson. Now, he's only 13-1 on DraftKings. I would not take that. But he is 25-1 on FanDuel, is Chop Robinson. The Dolphins lost so many pieces of their defense. Chop Robinson, of course, went to Penn State, so was in a complete athletic freak. 25-1 on a Dolphins team I expect to be pretty good, which I think can't hurt, and Chop Robinson could rack up sacks. I don't know, Evan, what do you think about Chop Robinson's role in year one with the Dolphins and his chances here? I know 13-1 doesn't look great, but 25-1 intrigued me.
25-1 for a guy who was drafted where he was drafted and has as much opportunity as he does, I think makes sense. He was a rotational player at Penn State. He was not even a starter, and he did not have big time production. I think he had 4 sacks last year.
Yeah.
And so those are some immediate red flags, but his pass rush efficiency, win rate, that kind of stuff, those are good. And I think that they're going to, you know, unleash him off the edge opposite Jalen Phillips this year. So, I mean, 25-1 for a first round pick at a really weak defensive in a weak, really weak defensive draft, I would not argue against it.
And he plays the position that I think most likely wins this award, right. Ryan? Most likely, it's not all the time, but most likely it's an edge rusher that ends up winning this. Ryan, any thoughts on Chop Robinson or any other guys you want to mention in defensive rookie of the year?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I look for in these situations is one of the one issue I had with Will Anderson last year, even though I, pumped them basically every week of the season. I probably bored some of you guys with that, but what kind of front are you playing for? Are you the guy already? That's Jared Verse's concern for me. You can double team Jared Verse with Chop Robinson. That's not going to be the case with him. So yeah. I like that. And like you said, the Dolphins are at least going to be competitive, and they're also going to be in primetime spots. So he might be more front and center than a lot of these other guys.
Any other defensive rookie of the year guys you wanted to mention before we move on, Ryan?
No, okay. It's a thin race. I'm largely going to avoid it in the early go.
The guys that I am always intrigued by that seem to never win are the linebackers that maybe have a chance to lead the NFL in tackles.
Yeah.
But I don't know, that seems to be a losing strategy for me personally.
I mean, and let's be honest, a lot of the guys voting for this, and not to insult the guys voting for this, they look at sacks. They look at guys that play on national TV. They're not looking for the guys who racked up 10 tackles a game, So it's not who we think should win. I know we talk about this all the time. Right. It's not who we think should win. It's very important to understand what these guys who are the voters are thinking.
Yeah, you want to get in the minds of the voters.
All right, let's go to everyone's favorite. Actually, probably my least favorite award, but it seems to be everyone else's favorite award, which is the MVP award. Now, 11 straight years, Ryan, 11 straight years, a quarterback has won the MVP. Lamar Jackson won it last year. Not since Adrian Peterson in 2012 has a non-quarterback won this award. And last year, it was close, man. I felt like there was a lot of momentum out there from the public and putting pressure on the voters that Christian McCaffrey or Tyreek Hill were the most valuable. I thought it was an outlier year that the quarterback play, nobody went out and grabbed it at quarterback until the very end when Lamar did. But man, if CMC wasn't going to win it last year, it seems like he's never going to win. It's just a quarterback award now. So anyways, and that's reflecting the odds. But anyways, Ryan, what do you think about MVP here as we start out?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think last year was an outlier. Like you just said, Lamar Jackson, I kind of think there wasn't a real MVP last year. Even Lamar Jackson towards the end statistically wasn't, where the other guys have been the last 10 years. But in general, I don't really even bother betting on non-quarterbacks. Just, like you said, with pass rusher and defensive rookie of the year, 90% of my bets are pass rushers. All of my bets now are on quarterbacks. Couple quick thoughts. Patrick Mahomes may actually have a little bit of a better supporting cast this year in terms of skill players. So that's interesting. Josh Allen, the Bills continue to bleed talent. So he's even more of a one-man army than he normally has been. Joe Burrow and CJ Stroud. I think there's a lot of talk about which one's better at this point. I'd still say Burrow has a better supporting cast, but Stroud might have probably already has a better team overall and definitely an easier division. So that's a positive for him. Kind of surprised Lamar Jackson's fifth behind those two guys, especially since he's won this twice. I also think there's a lot of mid-range guys that are decent priced, but the guys at the top are, especially in the AFC, the path to being the best performer in the AFC is much more difficult than it is in the NFC.
So my big problem with the MVP award is, it's really likely one of these guys that's a favorite right now is going to win it.
Yeah.
But the prices are so short, there's going to be a time at the season where they'll play bad for a couple of weeks and you'll be able to get them at much longer prices. And that's the kind of stuff that we're tracking. So that's the main reason I don't love this award. I thought we could get a better price on CJ Stroud. He's already down to 9-1, Evan. I know you talked about that right after the season. I mean, he added Diggs. And if you go back and look at CJ Stroud stuff, when we go back to Ohio State and it was man, all these receivers are so awesome. And I don't take anything away from them, but maybe it was CJ Stroud that was actually so awesome. So not surprised he's at 9-1, but yeah, Evan, any initial thoughts for you on 2024 NFL MVP race?
Yes. A little bit further down the board, Anthony Richardson and Kyler Murray. Yep. Anthony Richardson at 35-1. I mean, I know it was just in flashes early last season, but man, the flashes were big time. I know we're going to have a really, really high ranking on him.
Yeah.
In season long, certainly in dynasty. But they brought back Michael Pittman on the big deal. AD Mitchell, they kind of stole, at least from a talent standpoint, in the second round. Josh Downs is going to be better as a slot receiver in his second season. Jonathan Taylor should finally be healthy. And this offensive line beat every expectation known to man last year. They bring back all their guys, and they added three draft picks on the offensive line between the third and fifth rounds. So they have like a quality starting five now and big time depth. And Shane Steichen, I mean, I think the world of him. And then in regard to Kyler Murray, I think the world of Drew Petzing as well. They go out, they get, you know, Marvin Harrison, obviously, for Kyler. Kyler, I thought, played the best football of his career, arguably, especially within the context of the supporting cast last year. 50-1 and 35-1 for, you know, big time dual threat playmakers. I'm putting a sprinkle on both of those guys.
There is a 40-1 out there on Anthony Richardson. I mean, I have a full 3.9 inches for Anthony Richardson this year. And this reminds me a lot, Ryan, of 2019 Lamar. I know people got a lot down on Lamar at 50-1, 61 when Lamar won his first MVP. That was his second year in the league. This will be Anthony Richardson's second year in the league. He also is a dual threat quarterback, obviously. And yeah, I have a ton of respect for Steichen also, as Evan said. So I like that one too. Ryan, any more MVP thoughts for you?
Yeah. My one concern with Richardson would be, are the Colts going to be the number one seed in the AFC? I think that's the one, Nick. And it's the same thing with Murray. I would love Murray at 50-1 if the Cardinals were a more competitive team. The NFC is easier to rise in, but that would be my concern there, which is why, you know, this is a little gross because, you know, Aaron Rodgers is our age. But yeah, the truth is, you bet on the Jets to win the division, right? A couple weeks ago. I love that bet. You know, the Bills got worse. Miami got worse. And as long as this guy stays healthy and he's, you know, a semblance of what he used to be, the Jets have a 12-win season in them. And in that case, you know, I'm not sure he's going to be the most productive quarterback in the league, but I do think they're very live to be, you know, at least in contention for the top seed in the AFC. So I think Rodgers is interesting. That's something I'm going to wait till the schedule releases. And if I like their early stretch, I'm going to drop what I'm going to do in Discord.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's an interesting point that I should have brought up at the beginning. How many games do you need to win to be the NFL MVP? You got to win, what, 12? At least 13? Yeah. And so can Anthony Richardson win 12 or 13 games? Can Kyler Murray win 12 or 13 games? I mean, that would be obviously a tail outcome, but that's also why you're getting 50-1, 35-1. But yeah, Ryan, any general idea for people how many games you think a quarterback needs to win to at least be in the mix?
In the last 15 years, Matt Ryan's the only guy who had less than 12. He had 11. He's also the only one that wasn't a number one seed. I believe all of the other ones, which is 14 at this point, all number one seeds, at least 12 wins.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. One thing I do like, I think that the Colts, like, and Arizona in their current state, they are teams with an upward trajectory. But getting to 12 wins is difficult for anyone. So yeah, that's going to be the hard part. No question.
Also, one more on Anthony Richardson, just Jalen Hurts 2 years ago, you know, we all had those long shot tickets. He didn't get there at the very end because he got hurt, but I think it was like 40-1, 50-1 on Jalen Hurts. At that time, before that season, no one thought he could throw. Like, they were like, oh, he's a running back playing quarterback. And people say kind of the same things about Anthony Richardson. So, you know, I definitely like that 40-1 Anthony Richardson. All right.
Are you going to shoot down the Aaron Rodgers MVP due to his political viewpoints? Or are we going to save that for comeback player?
Let's save that for comeback.
All right. I think for the grand finale.
Because on Aaron Rodgers, like, if they actually go out and win 13 games, win the division or something, the media will have no choice, you know, no choice. But we'll talk about this at comeback, because at comeback, you got to lay like one to like plus 100. I mean, he's like a massive favorite at comeback. So we'll wait for that. All right. Let's go to offensive player of the year. Now, offensive player of the year is very clearly not a quarterback award. We just talked about how MVP is a quarterback award. I feel like, Ryan, what the voters are doing now, they know that MVP is a quarterback award. And so to win offensive player of the year now, it feels to me like you have to not play quarterback, because it's turned into the best player who's not a quarterback. The last five winners of offensive player of the year have been Christian McCaffrey last year, Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, Derrick Henry, Michael Thomas. This is basically like a fantasy football award. I mean, this should be right up our alley. Who will be the best non-quarterback fantasy player this year? That's who, to me, is likely to win this award. So, Ryan, how do you think about offensive player of the year at this point?
That's how I treat it too. It's, you know, the best offensive player that isn't a quarterback. I think that's probably the way it should be too. Long overdue. You know, the guys at the top of the list all make sense. Maybe team success becomes a factor for Justin Jefferson. You don't need to be on the best team in the league, but your team generally needs to make the playoffs for you to win this award. No, McCaffrey's right there. The Cowboys have won 12 games 3 years in a row. Tyreek Hill, you know, he doesn't get hurt. He breaks records last year. And, you know, the Bengals should be in the thick of things, too, as long as Joe Burrow's healthy. So Jamar Chase is there as well.
Right. Now, this is like, there's so many players in this because you basically have, like, the entire fantasy draft. A couple that stuck out to me. Puka Nacua is 30-1. Depending on what you think of Cooper Kupp at this point, like if Cooper Kupp regresses to a 20%, 16% target share, I mean, Puka could go absolutely ham again. Puka was in the mix with Stroud for offensive rookie of the year all the way down until the end last year. So 30-1 on Puka I thought was interesting. And then there's the guys that I like taking in fantasy high, 1-2 turn, Garrett Wilson, and Drake London. There is a 100-1 out there on Drake London right now. No team in the NFL is going to have a bigger scheme change than the Atlanta Falcons in terms of philosophy and everything. Drake London, if Drake London was drafted to the Rams, he'd be having 1,400 yard seasons. He'd be a household name, right? And so, because he's been with Arthur Smith, this donkey, and had terrible quarterback play, he's 100-1. I think it was on B365. To be this offensive player of the year. I think he's like 80-70-1 or something here on DraftKings. Yeah, here he is at 70-1. And then Garrett Wilson, assuming Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, he's only 40-1. But man, I think of Garrett Wilson on a talent level, similarly to a lot of the guys that are at the top, along with Drake London and guys like that. So I'd like those as long shots. They don't have to get there very often for it to be a plus EV bet. Evan, any thoughts on offensive player of the year?
I know you got it at 100-1 for Drake London, offensive player of the year on Bet365, whatever that is. I took it at 70-1 on DraftKings like a normal person.
Yeah, who wants an extra 30 cents? You know, no one.
30 cents. Look, wins are wins, you know? Yeah. You know, Nico Collins, I think, is kind of interesting at 60-1. But he's got more target competition. Yeah, this is a tough one. And we've had success betting this in recent years. So I don't know. I'm not ready to go real hard on anybody right now, aside from the Drake London. I mean, they're going to throw the ball in Atlanta. And also, he has like a little bit of a higher floor. And y'all probably hated the Penix pick, right? Yeah. But he's got the number 8 overall pick right there in case, you know, something happens with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has always played in pass first offenses. He knows this system already. They play indoors. We know that, I mean, Drake London has really flashed big time ability. It's just, he was playing in the run heaviest offense in the league the last 2 years. So I like him. He's to me, the guy who stands out right now.
Yeah. Ryan, any thoughts on Garrett Wilson, Drake London, or any other offensive player of the year thoughts?
Yeah, before the draft, I wrote up a bunch of guys. London was on there. Wilson was on there. Wilson's actually my favorite for two reasons. Actually, maybe even third, given your political stance here with Aaron Rodgers. First, you know, very narrow target tree there. Second, his skill set's very similar to Devontae Adams, and Devontae Adams went ballistic every year with Aaron Rodgers. So those two things I love. And third, like, if the Jets are good and they don't want to basically reward Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson as a monster year, that's, you know, that could favor him in a tight race.
Yeah, talking about the voters. Yeah, for sure. Okay. Let's go to defensive player of the year. Winner last year, of course, was Myles Garrett. This is mostly a pass rusher award, right? I know we talked about that with defensive rookie of the year, but I think the same thing applies for defensive player of the year. If you're a defensive back, you need to have an outrageous year and you need to get a ton of interceptions and pick sixes and stuff like that to win this. The last five winners have been Myles Garrett, Nick Bosa, TJ Watt, Aaron Donald. In the last 10 years, I believe only Stephon Gilmore has won this as a defensive back. Now, that is certainly reflected in the odds here. As you see, I believe the first defensive back even listed here is Sauce Gardner at 50-1. Everybody else, oh, Kyle Hamilton's there at 35-1. Sorry. But yeah, how do you think about defensive player of the year, Ryan?
Yeah, definitely with you. I pretty much almost always, like we're talking 95% of my bets in this market are on pass rushers. The problem here is the top four of Parsons, TJ Watt, Nick Bosa, and Myles Garrett. They're pretty much at the head of this thing every year for, you know, 3-4 years now. Max Crosby would be too, but team success is an issue for the Raiders. So that's the problem with him. If Max Crosby was a Cowboy, he'd be right. You know, he might even be the favorite in this, in this race. There's two long shots I like here, though. Rashawn Gary on the Packers is a guy who has a path to getting 16 plus sacks. And if Green Bay ends up being, you know, a top three seed in the NFC, that's a positive for him. And the other one I have is Montez Sweat, who you can get at a value. He's 30-1 on DraftKings, I believe. And then he is 50-1 on FanDuel. At 50-1, you know, again, the Bears have a few things going for them. They look like they're going to be a playoff team potentially. And they're one of the three or four teams that aren't drawn dead at having the league's best defense, which isn't a requirement, but helps. And if that happens, he's going to have a big year. So I like both of those guys at 50-1.
The guy who stands out to me at 50-1 is Danielle Hunter. We've already seen him have a 16 sack season. He's got double digit sacks in 5 of his last 7 seasons. I think the Texans are going to be awesome. I mean, I bet him to win the Super Bowl. I bet CJ Stroud to win MVP really early in the offseason. And Danielle Hunter also, I don't know if you believe in the motivation stuff, but they only gave him a 2-year deal. Now it was fully guaranteed 2 years, $48 million. But I mean, he's still very, very incentivized to continue to play at a high level to make more money. And again, I think the Texans are absolutely a Super Bowl contender, and he's playing opposite Will Anderson. I think he's going to ball out.
I don't mess with this market that much because I'm obviously not as in tune as the other people in terms of defensive players. Two that stuck out to me that I wanted to ask you guys about were the Chargers guys. You know, they made a decision, a conscious decision, to keep Joey Bosa and to keep Khalil Mack and let go of Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. I don't know how much these guys will be able to have an impact on this team, but yeah, Evan, any thoughts on Mack and Bosa's for the Chargers this year?
In situations like this, and I think you could even use this as an argument against Danielle Hunter, is you've got two bookend stud pass rushers. Who are you going to pick? And you almost need one to get hurt maybe, and then the other one just like takes over. Yeah. So I don't know. It's hard to pick between the two. Mac obviously had a much better season last year. Bosa's been hurt a lot.
Yeah. I was actually surprised that Mac is 60-1 and Bosa's 50-1. I would have thought that would have been flipped. But yeah, Ryan, any thoughts on that or any other final thoughts on defensive player of the year?
I also like Hunter. That makes a lot of sense. They got Arik Armstead there too, I believe, which, you know, that's all of a sudden like a
Jaguar stole him.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Oh,
the Texans thought they were going to get him, and the Jaguar stole him.
Yeah. Well, still, that's still a good situation. And with the Chargers, Mack had 17 sacks last year. They're probably going to be better, you know, and we'll talk about this when Coach of the Year comes around. They're at least like in competitive, you know, they can at least compete for a playoff seed. They're probably not winning the division is the one downside there. If Joey Bosa didn't have the injury situations he's had the last 2 years, he would have been my favorite in this range. So still like him, but he has been, you know, missed a ton of time in the last 2 years.
All right. Let's go to Coach of the Year. So this one, man, it's just always ties me up in knots. I really thought that Kyle, like, it's so clear what you need to do here. And I'll let Ryan explain more. But you basically need to have a team that is perceived to be bad or a team that is perceived to have issues and you somehow make the playoffs, right? That's been like the way to win this award. It's hard, almost impossible, it seems. Like everybody's, oh, Brock Purdy stinks. It's all the Kyle Shanahan system. And then Kyle Shanahan finished fourth in the Coach of the Year. If you think Brock Purdy stinks, if the narrative of Brock Purdy stinks, it can't be both. It can't be Brock Purdy stinks and Kyle Shanahan is also fourth in Coach of the Year. If Brock Purdy stinks, Kyle Shanahan should have been the Coach of the Year last year. I don't care how much talent they have on the team, but he finished fourth. And I guess my point, Ryan, is that as much as I want to bet on coaches of teams who are good, they just get penalized so hard. I thought Kyle Shanahan did an awesome job last year in the regular season with the 49ers. And he finished fourth. I mean, last year it was Stefanski won, and then D'Amico Ryans was second, and Dan Campbell was third. And all three of those guys did an awesome job. I don't get it. I get it. But Shanahan didn't even get any consideration. So Yeah, my blood pressure is rising, Ryan. What do you think about handling coach of the year?
Yeah, I think this is the most broken award race for that very reason. Like, you can be the best coach in the league, and like, you're not even in the conversation of winning it, which is, you know, if we're being honest, that's nonsense.
Andy Reid has the longest odds to win NFL coach of the year, multi-time Super Bowl winner.
Yeah.
That's the norm for this race too. It's, you know, that doesn't make sense, but like we talk about, it doesn't matter what we think or what we think should happen. It's, you know, what are the voters going to do? And run through these guys with Jim Harbaugh, my one question, and I'm going to add Robert Saleh and Raheem Morris here. If the Chargers win 10, 11 games, isn't the quarterback going to get most of the credit for that? So I'm not really super interested in any of those guys for that reason. Matt LaFleur and Robert Saleh, same situation. Matt LaFleur, Packers made the playoffs last year. D'Amico Ryans, Texans made the playoffs last year. So what are they going to come back from, you know? So those guys are all cross-offs for me. Matt Eberflus, I love. You can't really get him at most books now. He was 20-1 before the draft. He's, you know, right around 10-1 currently, but you can still get him at 16-1 on Caesars. And while I don't like to ever say this kind of thing because we like to bet the best lines here, that's still doable in this race, I'd say, if you didn't get it. That's my favorite one. And another one that I'm going to monitor, I'm not going to do it yet, but Dave Canales, if Bryce Young gets turned around, and that's not a very good division. If the Panthers have a soft schedule early in the year, again, I'll pop in Discord and give my thoughts on that. But that's at least on my radar at this point.
This is a market where, like, I end up betting too many guys. And every year I say the same thing. And I'm going to say it here, and hopefully it'll be a reminder for me. Every year this comes down to, like, the last month. I mean, guys come from way back, 20-1, 30-1 in the last month to win this award. My biggest bet of awards so far this year, though, has been on Eberflus at 20-1. I just think the Bears are going to be very good. They're in the NFC. You can do so much more damage in the NFC. And I think, given it's a rookie quarterback, a lot of new pieces, I think that Eberflus will actually get a lot of credit. I believe you said there's still a 16-1 out there on Caesars on Eberflus. I would still take that. Now, I took 20-1 on it, but I would still take the 16-1 on Eberflus. Evan, any thoughts on coach of the year?
Yeah, I took Eberflus 11-1 after the draft. I was late on that, but I'd still do it. 16-1 sounds great to me. Canales has so much, like, you know, his team has so much room for improvement that I think that he makes a lot of sense. And I think he's like a legit good coach.
Right.
And I don't think that Bryce Young is as bad as he showed last year. The two guys that stood out to me before you guys started talking, though, were Kevin O'Connell at 22-1 and Shane Steichen at 16-1. Both of these guys were under heavy consideration for it last year. Kevin Stefanski wound up pulling it out. But those guys, young coaches with young quarterbacks, I think that those guys could be appealing to the voters when all is said and done.
Yep. Anything else on Coach of the Year before we move on to comeback, Ryan?
What you said about the last month of all the award races, this one's the end of the season has the most influence on this one. I usually make one or two bets before the season, and then I pivot late. I don't really get involved unless there's an enormous value during the season.
All right. Last award market we're going to talk about today is comeback player of the year. We already teased this. Aaron Rodgers is +100, and that's not just DraftKings. And that's like everywhere. He is an outrageous favorite for this award. It reminds me a little bit, not as much, but a little bit of DeMar Hamlin situation last year. I thought DeMar Hamlin last year, this was my biggest position last year, was fading DeMar Hamlin. He opened at like -700. So I had everybody else that was viable at like 30-1 or longer. I ended up bricking out because Joe Flacco played five. Let me repeat that, Ryan. Five games Joe Flacco played in and won this award. Five. I mean, the criteria for this award, no one knows what it is. You die on the field, you come back. Oh, okay, maybe that's a criteria. Oh, no, you play five games. Maybe that's the criteria. I don't even know where to start. Now, I'll give my Rodgers rant in a second here, but how do you think about comeback player of the year here?
Usually, it's a quarterback for a playoff team. Sometimes, Ryan Tannehill, Alex Smith for the Commanders, and now Flacco, which, you know, like you said, five games is a little dicey, but those are the three situations where I don't believe they started on opening day. They started after the September. But all those teams made the playoffs. That's one of the keys there. So if you're looking for a quarterback, and there's a few of them here, you know, Rodgers. Well, I'll talk about Rodgers after you talk about it, because your stance is very interesting to me. I actually agree with it. Burrow and Cousins, I'm not sure they were injured enough to count. I think that's a bit like Lamar Jackson last year, so I'm curious on that. Anthony Richardson's an odd one, too, because he was a rookie and, like, obviously, you know, fourth overall pick, supremely talented, but I'm not sure comeback player of the year makes sense for him. And, you know, one I'm gonna say a grotesque name here. I've yelled at you for saying his nickname over the years, Adam. Daniel Jones is one of those guys who's, like, in a comeback player of the year spot because everyone thinks he's terrible, and he is. His team's bad. People think Drew Lock might actually beat him out, but if he's the opening day starter, which, you know, again, I would be surprised if he's not, unless it's injury related. He has the best group of pass catchers he's ever had in his career. He's at least shown flashes of being decent. And if the Giants are a playoff team behind him playing well, he's going to be a guy that's going to rise in this race.
I could see that. So I think the question, if you're betting this market right now, is should I go for Aaron Rodgers fade? I'm not saying he can't win it. I just think that it has to be so clear. Like, if it's close, the media is not going to vote for Aaron Rodgers. And we're not here to get political. We know you guys come here to escape from all this BS. Oh,
you don't want to get political?
No, absolutely not. I know you guys come and listen to this to get away from all that, and we could not agree more. We're not going to talk about all the stuff that's going on with Aaron Rodgers and whatever. But I do think that there's some faction of the voters who don't like this guy, don't want to vote for him. And if it's close, they won't vote for him. And to have him at plus 100, given that backdrop, I'm looking for fades. It's just kind of hard for me to find one. Last year, I had Breece Hall, who was coming off of an ACL tear and went absolutely nuts. And he got like no votes. I mean, like none. Last year, it was Flacco one. Hamlin was second, who literally barely played. And Baker Mayfield was third. And I feel like the award has turned more lately into the perception is this guy sucked and he came back, right? Instead of this guy was hurt and he came back. Because guys coming back from ACL now, it's so standard. And guys coming back from injury now, it's so standard. And so I feel like the voters are looking for something more. No one knows what the criteria is, but I feel like they're looking for a better story than that. I don't have anything great. If I thought Sam Darnold was going to start for the whole year, that would be an awesome one, but I don't see that happening, obviously. So I don't have any bets in this market yet. Evan, any thoughts on comeback player of the year?
I don't have any bets in this market either. I mean, I could see it being like Matthew Stafford goes down, Jimmy Garoppolo goes in, plays in the McVay system with all that talent, and like he wins it. You know, that takes a number of events that are not predictable. Deshaun Watson, I would throw in that boat. Like, you could see him doing, you know.
No, play, Evan.
Excuse me. I'm going to make a point.
The voters will never vote for Deshaun Watson.
That was going to be my point, Adam. God. We're done with this. I don't have any bets here. I mean, actually, we should talk about Bryce Young because he falls in the category, he sucked as a rookie. You could take him at 60-1, you know, if the Panthers somehow, you know, win 9 games. All of a sudden, like, you know, he could be in the mix. He's 60-1.
Yeah. I think the only pushback on that I'd have is that he was the number one overall pick. What's he coming back from, really? He was literally number one overall pick. But, yeah. I can't believe, like, they mess up this market every year. Deshaun Watson is the sixth favorite. I promise you. It's not ambiguous like the Rodgers thing. I promise you the media is not voting for Deshaun Watson. I promise you. Ryan, any more thoughts on comeback player of the year?
Yeah, we talked about Watson last year where he was the literal favorite in this race where it's like, why are we even talking about this? Where from a pure football standpoint, Evan, like he would actually be like a great candidate, but like you said, they're never going to vote for him. And
yeah, that was going to be my point. Like he could play to the level where he should absolutely win it, but they're not going to vote for him.
Right.
Right. And I think you're right with Rodgers. Rodgers is going to literally have to be the standalone guy in this, where he's basically going to be like the runner-up in the MVP race to win this award. They're going to try. Not everyone, like it's not like it's a conspiracy or anything, but like there are certain voters that are going to go out of their way to not vote for him. I agree with that.
Yeah. Evan, we haven't talked on here since the Odell Beckham signing. I have some takes on it, but somebody did try to show me Odell 150-1 to be comeback player of the year. But just generally, Evan, what do you think of the Dolphins' decision to bring in Odell, and what do you think his role will be this year?
I just think that, I mean, if they're smart, which I think that Mike McDaniel is, they are just going to limit the shit out of his snaps all season long, try to keep him healthy, use him as like a clear third receiver. Maybe he even plays behind the rookie that they took in the sixth round, out of Virginia.
Malik Washington.
Yeah. Malik Washington. And they try to ramp him up for the playoffs. I don't think that he's going to be a big enough part of the offense. I think if they get 30 catches for, 420 yards out of him and three or four touchdowns in the regular season, that's a win.
Yeah. That was kind of my take too. I was shocked that I got so much pushback on Twitter. It was mostly from Dolphins Laundry Bros, but people still think Odell can really play in a big way for the Dolphins here. Ryan, any more comments on comeback before we get out of here?
One thing I'll throw in is a running back hasn't won since Garrison Hurst in 2001. If McCaffrey didn't win 2 years ago and Breece Hall didn't really contend last year, I'd just about cross it off for betting purposes.
Yeah. I mean, Breece got like no votes. I couldn't believe it. Like none. So yeah. All right. This was fun. I got my blood pressure up a couple of times. That's always good. Don't tell my doctor. All right. Ryan, always appreciate you coming on. Tell the people where they can find you on the social machines.
You can find me at Ryan Reynolds NFL on Twitter.
Ryan Reynolds NFL on Twitter. Be sure you're following Ryan and be sure you are logged into the Discord. You can talk to him about all the award stuff. Of course, you can find Evan Silva at Evan Silva, at Adam Levitan, all one word, at Establish the Run, all one word as well. For Ryan, for Evan, for producer Luke, for producer Ryan, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.